Welcome to the Big Mike Fun Podcast, where you learn about advanced wealth building strategies from real estate investing to creating massive ROI and secured retirement profits. So pour yourself a cup of coffee, grab a notepad, and lean in. Big Mike has got the mic, starting now.
Welcome to the Big Mike Fun Podcast. I'm the Big Mike, Mike Zlotnik. Today, it is my pleasure and a privilege to welcome, once again, Ryan Parson, my good friend of many years. Hi, Ryan.
Hello there, Mike.
How's the weather in the beautiful Glenwood Springs, Colorado?
Well, it's as we move into the spring months here, Mike, we're having some great spring snowboarding going on, but spring has definitely sprung. And as all the locals say, summer is even more enjoyable here than winter, although the rest of the world kind of knows it's for our winter months. So we had a great skiing and snowboarding season, looking forward to an equally great summer coming up. So thank you very much for asking. All is well out here.
That's great to hear. Yeah, it's a gorgeous part of the country. And actually, Colorado, I think, is considered to be the most beautiful state in the country. I don't know why, but it's certainly gorgeous out there. So.
Well, I'm definitely biased living out here in the Rocky Mountains. It's a great place to get to be able to be at and exist in.
I happen to agree with you. Every time I come out, it's a treat. Let's shift a little bit and talk today. So what's new with the Mile Marker Cloud? Just give us a little bit of an update. What's happening? What's new and exciting? And two, we have an exciting topic today. Well, I don't know how exciting it is, but it is an important topic. How about that? We'll talk a little bit about passive investing versus folks becoming a real estate professional, maybe one of the spouses. And what are the benefits? What are the complexities, practical implications, and who should consider doing it? And how do you solve this issue working with your members? So let's start with a quick update on the Mile Marker Club first.
Sure. So again, Mike, thanks for having me. I always appreciate being a guest on your podcast and being able to share knowledge with your audience and high net worth investors at large about different types of wealth strategy techniques. And as you know, Mike, a Mile Marker Club in its formality over almost a decade now is designed, we started it for high net worth investors that had a focus on alternative investments in their portfolio, and realizing, like for me and my own family, and other high net worth families I've worked with for nearly two decades now, there was always a struggle, and I still believe that to exist today, which is why we're here to serve, to help families really be able to think strategically about their holistic wealth. And there's such a chasm to cross once a family has decided they want to be in alternative investments. They want to control their own wealth, which is really where the breakdown of traditional financial planning and traditional financial planners break down at. And so part of what we've been evolving to here at the club, which is why I'm excited to have this topic discussion with you here today, is that over the last decade, high net worth families, because the market has been good, alternative investments, real estate markets, even the traditional stock market, broadly, has been very good to families and really to all investors, which has been great. And sometimes when things just kind of keep going really, really well, or appear to be, and kind of keep going up and up and up, as it largely has been appearing, things like taxes can sometimes get lost in the sauce, and we kind of forget about the taxes, which is one cog of the holistic financial planning process. When you have starting to see turbulence in the marketplace, and I think on your last podcast, Mike, I was sharing a little bit about how we define turbulence in the marketplace when you've got market fluctuations happening. We've obviously had a significant change in the balance of power in our elected officials, particularly in Washington. And so taxes have kind of taken on a whole new meaning, and as we're seeing families revisiting that. And so that they maybe haven't put as much emphasis on over the last decade as they are now. And typically, when it comes to strategizing about tax, you certainly need your CPA. We are not a CPA. I don't pretend to play one on TV either. But as high net worth families, we have to be able to constantly think about our holistic plan. And tax is really just a sliver of the holistic plan. So, you know, at the Mile Marker Club, we consider ourselves CFOs for our high net worth families that we serve and help them with their holistic treasury management, all things about their wealth, and understanding that tax is just a piece of it.
So I love your comments about the tax becoming even more important with the change of the sheriff in town and the projected tax increases. So the tax impact is becoming a greater part of the strategy for the reasons that the taxes are going up. And I really love your expression, don't let the tax tail of, how do you say it? The wealth dog be...
You don't want to let the tax tail wag the wealth dog.
That's right. That's right. Thank you, Ryan. I love that expression. That's a brilliant way to put it. So but the tax tail is growing. Apparently, the dog is it's got some kind of mutation, and the tail is getting bigger. Yes. Unfortunately, so now it's even more relevant to think of the strategies to mitigate growing taxes. So let's just use a use case scenario. When there's a successful doctor or a dentist or an entrepreneur, whatever the occupation is, and the business is doing well and the tax liabilities are increasing, would it make sense for the investor to have the spouse become a real estate professional? But that's the discussion here. So let's go back to the basics first. What are the benefits of real estate profession? So how does investments in real estate as a form of alternative investing can help through massive depreciation benefits? And how, for a real estate professional, the real estate passive losses all sum up versus with all other income, and the family, the file jointly, can deduct real estate depreciation losses against the successful business income. Let's chat a little bit about that. So start with the basic, give folks an overview. Again, I'm not a CPA either. I don't play one on TV. But, you know, for educational purposes, typically, the way we understand this, how does passive investors treat passive losses, pigs versus pals, passive investment gains versus passive allocation losses for non-professionals, and how it works differently for real estate professionals. Please enlighten us.
So the first thing to remember, which is part of the reason you, myself, so many of our clients that you and Tempo serve and that we serve here at Mile Marker Club, got into real estate because there's always been a certain fascination with real estate in the U.S., maybe globally, but our purvey has always been primarily domestically. And part of that reason there's a fascination about real estate is that, particularly here in the United States, the IRS has provided, Congress has provided different types of tax benefits for relatively consistently, and that can extend for a relatively long period of time. And that's been a part of the bedrock that has made the U.S. economy in one way work so well for so many decades, and for a couple hundred years now, that we've put this emphasis as a society on real estate and investing, and therefore it brings some tax benefits. And like you said, Mike, whether there's key distinctions that take place to take advantage of different types of tax benefits. And though one of the key distinctions is, are you an active real estate investor or are you a passive real estate investor? And over time, when you think however you decided to enter into the world of real estate investing, chances are for most of us, Mike, we all started off as passive investors. You know, we did some private lending, you know, maybe we invested in a fund or a syndication as a passive limited partner, whatever the case might be. But most of us just started out, like you said, we were, you know, in my case, I was a corporate America executive. Mike, you came out of corporate America for that matter when you started your real estate investing career. And so the first thing to understand as an investor is, are you active? Meaning, are you actively involved with the project? Are you actively involved, maybe swinging the hammer to rehab the single family home? Are you actively involved with managing the deal, whatever it is, an office complex, a self-storage unit, whatever it happens to be? Or are you purely passive where you're just, you know, investing money either through your IRA or through your non-tax qualified money? So I think, Mike, that's the first big distinction to this real estate professional. As an accredited investor or a high net worth investor, then you have to decide, where are you wanting to spend your time? Because to get into some of these more active investor benefits that the IRS may provide, you've always got to make sure, in that spirit of not letting the tax tail wag the wealth dog, what does your best life look like? And for some investors, like you and I both started off, Mike, and chances, you know, most of us as real estate investors did, we were passive and then maybe realized we wanted to be more active and make it more of a feeling like a business. But in some cases, we revert back and we, you know, we've made the wealth that we want to make and we don't want to be active in it anymore. So maybe I'll pause there, Mike, talking about this active passive piece.
Yeah, I love that commentary. I think you're coming from a holistic perspective, from a planning perspective, and you want to make sure people build their business around their lives, not their lives around their business. So if they want to be passive and let other folks manage their wealth, then it's a perfectly good setup. And a lot of people do that. At some point in people's careers, they may decide to go active for some amount of time.
Yes.
And to be a real estate professional, you absolutely have to be active. It is a requirement. And but one thing I just wanted to basically comment on is that the most real estate passive investors, limited partners, or just lenders, or folks that are not active, they can use still benefits of real estate depreciation and passive losses. Another concept called passive loss harvesting. To offset the gains, but the gains can only be offset on the passive investment gains. So pigs versus pulse, passive allocation losses versus the passive investment gains. So most passive investors know that and they can use it. And just as a quick comment, the passive investment gains are income generated from investments in real estate minus expenses, minus depreciation, right? And whatever's left becomes a passive investment gain. The other example of that would be capital gains. You bought a property, held it for some years, and then you sold. That's also a form of passive investment gains. And passive allocation losses could be losses from operational property, and depreciation extends that, obviously. So that's for passive. Now, for active folks, say someone is in a position to invest a good amount of capital. They like real estate. Obviously, real estate provides a ton of benefits. Mm-hmm. And they love working in real estate. And one of the spouses is successful, entrepreneur, doctor, lawyer, whatever. And the other spouse actually enjoys real estate and wants to invest. So what happens when they become real estate professional? What it takes to become a real estate professional? So yeah, speak a little bit about that. What are the key benefits and what does it take to become one? I mean, it's obviously work. You're turning yourself into an active investor. Not only just active investor, you have to meet formal requirements of real estate professional.
That's exactly right, Mike. And so, you know, you're now an active business, if you will, or you're this active investor, and the IRS outlines several, you know, different requirements that you have to have: X amount of hours per year, X amount of activity involved with the real estate in that, and or in this case, real estate. And what that brings you, like you were just mentioning, or I should say, then in addition to what you were mentioning, some of those potential losses on a piece of real estate or a piece of a deal, or the non-cash elements known as depreciation that isn't a loss, but can bring you some benefits, could potentially then be used to offset other forms of income that don't come from real estate. Maybe from your other, you know, other form of active income, can bring some of those benefits of real estate to help you reduce your overall taxable income that year, that if you aren't a real estate professional, you're not able to do. And so that's usually one of, I think, the biggest things that, you know, attracts an investor, Mike, to wanting to do that, is a way to holistically manage the income taxes when there's other types of income coming into the household beyond just investment-related income.
That's right. So let's just put some specific numbers around this. So as far as I understand, again, consult with your CPA. I don't play one on TV,
yes,
like we talked.
Right.
750 hours, if I'm not mistaken. And there's the two other really important tests. The other test is that has to be your primary occupation. In other words, the hours you're spending in real estate have to be greater in whatever else you're doing, excluding the hobbies, obviously. But if you have a business, if you do real estate and you also have a side gig selling widgets on the internet, the hours you're spending on the real estate has to be greater than the hours you're spending selling widgets. And then the third test is the activity test, right? What activities are typically real estate professional activities? So from what I understand, and again, check with your CPA, it's real estate developers or developers, right? You have the buyers and flippers. You buy a house, you fix it up, you flip it. You got folks that buy and sell houses and collect commissions, agents, brokers. You got the folks that lease properties. You can be a real estate leasing agent. And then the categories, the last category, as far as I understand, just high-level categories, folks who manage properties or operate properties or manage portfolios of properties. Again, it's all about active real estate activities. There's probably some other flavors of the same thing, but it's really real estate active participation. And those tests are important because if you pass other tests, but you don't pass this test, you cannot be considered. So any other thoughts, comments, best practices? Because the benefits could be substantial, but it is an undertaking to commit to this and to make sure it passes the IRS audit. If they come in and they audit, you better show the hours you spent. You better have that being your top activity. And you better do something related to these, you know, development or related activities.
That's right, Mike. And what you were just talking about, some of those what I would call asset classes within the real estate sector, meaning those types of deals that you might consider, you know, being active with, managing those things that you said. What immediately resounds to me, again, in the spirit of not letting the tax tail wag the wealth dog in this case is, what are you investing in? Because you still need to first and foremost fundamentally answer the question for yourself, what makes a good deal for me? Just because it's a deal has some additional tax benefits to it, some way, somehow, being the real estate professional or some of the other flavors of tax benefits related to real estate that are popular today, you still have to be able to look at a deal and go, that's still a good investment at its core. I can still go make money. It's still a good risk-adjusted deal. It's worth taking the risk on, because if you start doing deals with the tax benefits in mind first, and you put the merits of the deal itself secondarily, that is a recipe, Mike, that most investors that have tried that before would say, don't do that again. They wouldn't do that again. They, in other words, they kind of lose the forest through the trees, so to speak, and that you forget your core underwriting philosophies, you forget your investment mandate for you and your portfolio and your family, and you lose track of some of your underwriting grip. Because you might look at a deal and go, oh, it's a little light on this underwriting here. Oh, that investment to value is a little bit higher than I normally would. But no, it's okay because I'm going to get all these tax benefits over here. So it's still okay. And it's not okay, I guess, to just put it bluntly, Mike. You know, when you look at it from a fund manager perspective, which I know we're talking about individual investors here because of the pass-through issues related to the fund. It's not as irrelevant. But my point is, as a fund manager, you have your investment mandate. You are looking for deals that meet X, Y, and Z criteria about the merits of the deal. Then you see down the line in the pro forma, maybe there's some depreciation or something like that. Philosophically, it's exactly the same way for a private investor. If they're considering being a real estate professional to get some added benefits, so be it. But you can't lose track of what your investment philosophies are and your own demands as far as an investment mandate and investment underwriting criteria, I think still needs to be paramount, regardless of what types of assets or specifically real estate assets you may be choosing to invest in and, you know, getting any sort of real estate professional benefits then are just icing on the cake.
Yeah, yeah. Makes total sense, right? So again, back to the tax tail, not to wag the wealth dog. Of course, the what you just said is absolutely critical. The deal has to make sense. Not only has to make sense, it has to fit in the overall portfolio. What you do with your investors is to how does it fit in your portfolio and your goals? If the deal doesn't fit in your portfolio, you're looking for income and you just found this heavy value deal because you need the depreciation and other losses, then what are you doing? You're mismatching your investment objective philosophy with focusing on the tail of the dog. So I'm in agreement with you 1,000%. So the difference is that it's just another key critical goal. If you want to become a real estate professional, you absolutely have to think about how does that whole exercise fit into your overall strategy. So it can be operated in a vacuum, but we're on the same page that deal selection and deal underwriting cannot be jeopardized by the desire to save on taxes. And as a fund manager, I can tell you, I really don't look at any deals and their depreciation. I don't care. What is their tax benefits? What I care about is it's a good risk-adjusted return. If the economics work, I'm happy to invest. Oh, if it happens to have great tax benefits, that's wonderful. But it's a side benefit. At the same time, for some folks who are looking to also use advantage of the best, most advantage investment class in the United States, real estate, and it's massive depreciation benefits in the right type of projects to help them manage their tax liabilities not related to real estate. Again, one of the spouses in the couple being professional, the other one being non-professional. It's an interesting consideration. It might be worth for folks to consult with your professional or work with you to help them plan. For some folks, it makes sense. For some folks, it doesn't. Especially if they're towards the end of their career and that they don't want to be active. I mean, why do this? But if they're active in with a couple of active businesses, maybe it's worth taking one step beyond being passive, consider becoming more active and then ultimately a real estate professional if it's the right type of move But absolutely cannot jeopardize solid underwriting and solid portfolio planning.
Well, maybe the kind of a final comment, Mike, based on what you just said there is, the IRS, the tax code in this country is written to be revenue neutral. Now, the amount of taxes in this country have gone up and up and up and, all the different forms, but at the core of income tax, the way at least our IRS thinks about it anyway, is designed to be revenue neutral. And so,
What does that mean, revenue neutral? I'm just curious. What does that mean? Because I don't know, it's not applicable now. They're not revenue neutral. They're constantly in a big hole.
Well, it would appear to be that way, yes. But theoretically, if Congress is going to give a tax deduction to something, they're going to raise it somewhere else. And if they want to, incentivize something, they're going to get the revenue back somewhere in the spirit of being revenue neutral. If you raise something, then you can lower something else. Or if you want to lower something, then you're going to have to raise something else. That's the definition of revenue neutral. And so it is fascinating. Whether they do it or not, Mike, is a whole nother debate. We could probably record.
Oh, massive politics coming into play. Revenue neutral. I think what we observe recently is things that whatever they do is to get into office and stay in the office. And then obviously borrow until the cows come home without any consideration for the future generations, because it's a whole lot simpler, easier than increasing taxes on somebody else to pay for the cuts for another party. And this tag of war, I understand that revenue neutral, but I think we're very far away from that today.
Well, and that's, it becomes, you see it when talking about taxes in real estate here, the tax benefits, because one of the elements you brought up a bit ago was about depreciation. And a lot of investors, I love depreciation. A lot of investors have made it work for them. But depreciation, unless you die with the piece of real estate, depreciation always has to be, or usually has to be, recaptured when you go and sell the asset, or you've got to keep kicking the can down the road. In other words, anytime you use some more of these, I'm just going to say exotic tax strategies, Mike, that's for some people it might not seem exotic at all, but for the bulk of us, it requires active management, active planning. There's a lot of active you got to do to maintain the benefit, because the IRS typically says, okay, you can have it now, but we're going to get it back somewhere down the road under these circumstances. And usually the circumstances are more advantageous to the IRS than they are to us as the taxpayer/investor. So I think we need to, again, keep that in mind. Whatever tax benefits we may or may not be trying to engage with currently, you always got to remember the government, at least theoretically, operates revenue neutral. What they giveth today, they will taketh away from you tomorrow. And if you don't plan for that, the best laid strategy may not be very advantageous in all cases if you don't think about the long-term perspective.
Yeah, Ryan, that's a great point. I want to rephrase this another way. Depreciation is not free. You get it today, but tomorrow it needs to be recaptured at some point. But too many investors just got used to it, and they keep kicking the can down the road indefinitely, and they hope to pass it to their heirs and have a step up basis kick in. But if the asset gets sold, there is a recapture. And some really interesting questions comes in, right? People try to do 1031 exchanges to avoid that. And the game continues. The opportunity zones concept kicked in. But at the end of the day, it's all about, it's the juice that you've drunk, and you got used to it, and you enjoyed the benefits, and you got your deductions. But later, you can never come back. It becomes really hard to come back and recapture all this depreciation. So it becomes a very fascinating conversation. But a lot of people, for practical reasons, would rather kick the can down the road and push the taxes into the future date. It's a lot less painful in the future. At least it feels that way, especially if it's years down the road. So,
I agree with that, Mike. And you know, the kicking the can down the road, there's certainly strategies around that, and there's some families that have done that wildly successfully. But they have a plan in place, and they've got the right expertise around them to be able to manage it for the long term. And I think that's a critical thing to remember. The government and the IRS will outlast all of us, suffice it to say. So if they are playing a really long-term game, that you've got to understand how your long-term game as an investor can, you know, best benefit from that and best participate with that as need be. And so I think a lot of investors will say over time, as their investing expertise, as their comfort level, and just as their life evolves, it's more about options and having options down the road to maneuver your wealth the way you need to. And I'll stop here with saying, the more you might look at taxes, you know, that's part of the argument. Do you just deal with them now, especially if you think tax rates are lower now than they may be in the future? And that's part of the analysis that you want to look at, not only from the number standpoint, but how much flexibility do you want your wealth to have without, you know, strings attached to it?
Yeah, that's a great point. This whole exercise, if the rates are lower today than in the future, and you don't pay the taxes today, you wind up paying higher rates in the future. So yeah, it's a trade-off, and if you don't plan for it, it may be pretty painful. But lots of people choose to still kick the can, and depreciation is one of the most powerful strategies we've seen out there. And the reason I mention this again, without giving any promote, we in Temple Growth Fund have massive depreciation benefits. And for those who have good planning and they get good advice from CPA and tax attorneys, they may want to consider investing with us into a solid fund on a risk-adjusted basis that also passes through a lot of depreciation benefits. That's all I'm going to say. Consult with your CPA. And Ryan, thank you very much for having for coming on the podcast again. As we agreed, you'll be a regular guest. You're already a regular guest, and your wisdom is much appreciated. Thank you kindly.
It's a pleasure to be here, Mike. Thanks for the invitation today.
Thank you for listening to the Big Mike Fund Podcast. To receive your copy of Mike's How to Choose a Smart Real Estate Fund book, head to BigMikeFund.com or visit Amazon and type Mike Zlotnick. Keep listening and keep investing Big Mike style. See you on the next episode.